Welcome to part two of the 112th Gooner podcast. Following on from the first part, we're accompanied by Black Scarf Movement's Kelvin, editor of the Gooner, Kevin Witcher, and Emmanuel Mustafa Goldstein, the editor of the Hampstead Village Voice. Now, guys, just after the 111 podcast, everything looked and felt absolutely great. You know, we've got a couple of easy games coming up. You've got QPR at home, Reading away in the League Cup, Norwich away. It'll be a piece of piss. We're going to be top of the league by the middle of November. And then we went and lost 1-0 away to Norwich. Basti, what did you think of that?
It was just the worst display of football I've seen from Arsenal for a long, long time.
And apart from three other games we're going to speak to about this month, the
place well, and, that's it. And it's not got an awful lot better since that, really. There's been a lot of very, very. It's just the bottom's fallen out, to be honest with you. And I was just pointing out. I just looked at the league table. There's only QPR and Fulham below us of the London clubs. QPR being the bottom club of all bottom clubs, and then Fulham, who are on the same points as us, and actually looked, I think, probably better than we did on Saturday.
But West Ham got more points than Arsenal.
Well, I think so. I will just confirm that with you, Kev. Hang on, stand by.
I'm finding this difficult to believe.
I know they've got 18 from 11.
West Ham have 18 points and we have 16.
You're joking.
God
Tottenham
almighty.
Have 17.
The so, world turned upside down.
Yes, West Ham United, and they're getting more column inch points as well in the Evening Standard. We've been reduced to a little also rans. I mean, frankly,
is it an obituary, Bastard? Yes. Is it an obituary?
It pretty much is. We are. Look, I think the Arsenal board and management and players need to take a good hard look at themselves, and shit has to happen and fast.
What did you think at the time, Kelvin? Did you think, you know, we've just had international break, 10 days, our players all over the world in their countries, but we played Norwich, they haven't got a single international player apart from the fifth choice England goalkeeper. It was just a blip, we'll be absolutely fine next week. Or did you think, hang on, I've seen this. This isn't a good thing.
I put it down to jet lag from that flight. Yeah,
14-minute flight.
From the 14-minute flight from Luton, it could only be jet lag, surely. That's the only excuse that I can come up with, because the performance isn't worth discussing, really. I mean, absolutely atrocious.
I think they were still in the VIP airport lounge, sipping free drinks and being millionaires.
I think it took them longer to travel from the airport, Norwich Airport, to the ground than it did to fly.
I mean, who thought of that? Whose idea?
Well, that would be Arsene Wenger.
So he would be the one saying, why do not we fly to
Norwich?
He
does sign off on everything at the club, pretty much.
I mean, I think he needs to take. I think he needs a holiday, you know, or
something. Well, it may be retirement, some of us would say.
Well, a long holiday.
I mean, I think the really worrying thing about that Norwich game was that the first half was dire. Okay. So you think, well, at least at half time, they'll be sorted out, they'll come out a different team. It was exactly the same in the second half. And that was especially concerning, because in the past, you know, Arsenal have done they've started off very poorly and come out a different team. You know, that is what the manager does at half-time. He motivates. He changes things. You know, he gives them a kick up the arse. Well, I don't know. Maybe the manager's given up. It was very difficult to really understand why Arsenal could not improve even in the second half.
We have to look at the back four as well. I mean, like Vermaelen slipped there. There was a slip. I mean, they've all been slipping about, and it's just full of what I can only call schoolboy errors, left, right, and centre, all over the shop.
Well, Vermaelen seems to slip over for everybody else, because I've never seen a footballer slip so much.
I've got to be honest with you. It actually did occur to me at one point that I thought there was some kind of betting syndicate going on, and that the bloody thing was a fix, because it was that bad. It was comical. You know, I just can't see players of that. You know, there are some good players in this club. I mean, I'm even talking about them. I'm you know, feeling very detached from the whole situation, because this is not the Arsenal that we've come to know and love.
But the point there is that there are some good players at that club, and my argument on people being afraid of a change of manager is my belief that with a different manager, with motivation, with organisation, with different preparation for matches, we could get more out of the players we've got. And that's why I'm not afraid of change. You know, that's why I think it would be a good thing. because I don't believe that Arsene Wenger is getting the best out of the players we have. You know, I mean, some of them had reputations of sorts before they arrived at Arsenal, and they've just gone south. And I think the motivation is a huge issue, and I think the manager has lost the ability to motivate.
I think he's also lost the ability to play players in their right position.
Absolutely.
You know, we've got this thing, you know, with Theo Walcott and recently Lucas Podolski. Now, Walcott, I know that he divides many people on his ability, but for me, his proper position is the old-fashioned inside right. Not out on the wing, not right down the middle. If there was a montage of the goals that he scored from us, you'll see that it's that sort of old inside right position. Mm-hmm. You know, and if you could take advantage of his pace by putting a ball over the top for him to run onto, mm-hmm. again, look at how many goals that he scores like that. Sticking him out on the wing, he's not going to achieve very much. Mm. Same as Podolski. Podolski's doing exactly the same as Bentner did when Bentner was playing for us. What's the point?
I think the shape of the funny thing is, the first three games of the season when we were the Invincibles, it looked like we had some shape again, and everyone was thinking, well, Stephen Bold's got us all sorted out and everything. The shape has gone all over the place. There was one point recently, was it the Schalke game, I suddenly saw five Arsenal bodies all rushing towards the ball, it was like children in a playground, you know. Or I think I've seen games like that in Istanbul, lots of Turkish guys all running around the ball together. It was a bit like Harry Enfield's Charles, here comes the Arsenal captain, and look, here they go, you know, and they're all running after the ball. I mean, it actually looked like that at one point, and then I think it was Koscielny scored an own goal, or was it for Malin? I don't know. The amount of own goals going in at the moment.
If it was a game that Koscielny played in, I'm pretty certainly guaranteed.
I can't remember. It's all turned into this horrible kind of nasty.
Well,
nightmare.
One of the things that I noticed when they got their equaliser, we were defending the corner, and we were doing our zonal marking, and it just doesn't work. And I looked, and every single one of our players was looking at the ball and where it was coming from, rather than looking to see where the Fulham player was to see where they could stop him.
Yeah.
And he just came from nowhere and just did it down to the ground and in. You know?
You could see it on the Match of the Day replay from a different angle. As soon as Berbatov was in the middle of nowhere, you saw Vermaelen turn around on the spot as if to say, well, this is where I've been told to stand. I can't mark anyone. That's coupled with an awful lot of rumours that were on Twitter last night that apparently Bold and Wenger have had a huge row in front of most of the other players because, well, we used to see those in the first games of the season, didn't we? Per Mertesacker would go on the near post and he'd be Steve Bold and he'd flick it on for whoever was coming in. Could have been Adams, could have been O'Leary, could have been Keown, anyone who was coming in. We don't do that anymore. So that's been knocked on the head by Wenger. We also used to defend corners really, really well at the start of the season. Yet apparently zonal marking, which we fucked up last year, appears to have come in. I mean,
zonal marking for me in that sort of situation doesn't make any sense at all because you don't know what you've got to go with what the attackers
from a set piece. It's common sense.
Yeah, no, you need to be right up the arse of whoever's fucking there and make sure you win the ball first. That's it. Because otherwise you're going to have everyone in their zones and everyone else is in zone one, and then that's no good, is it?
Is there any truth in the fact that, you know, early on in the season when we were defending well, three games without conceding a goal, everyone was saying, that's because Steve Bolt's here. And then maybe Wenger's got this ego that says, I don't like that. He comes in and changes things, and all of a sudden we're shipping goals like we were before.
I mean, if Wenger has started tinkering with a defence that Steve Bold has clearly got into some sort of shape, I would find that very strange. I mean, I don't know what's going on there. I mean, do we have any ideas or insights?
Well, there is a story that basically Wenger got pissed off with Steve Bold being given credit for Arsenal's solidity at the beginning of the season.
Why would he be pissed off with that?
Well, it's difficult to believe, but I do personally think that Wenger is slightly mad now. I think in terms of his sanity, he's on the slope, much as his football team is. I mean, I just do genuinely think he's losing it very slowly. And it does happen to men of a certain age, not all of them, but some of them.
Maybe you should drink a bit more of Alex Ferguson's red wine.
Well, you know, that's where basically that is your yardstick. And I think it should be remembered that Manchester United have not spent significantly more than Arsenal. They've spent a bit more. Okay. They've spent an extra 10-15% over the last five or six seasons. They've also won about seven or eight trophies.
But they've not been playing that brilliantly either. They have let in a lot of goals.
They've been getting results. Look at the Villa game.
Yeah, that's the difference. The difference is they get that last minute opportunity, they score it. We get on a plate and we don't. In front of our home fans, penalty. You know, and they are just, there's a hair's breadth sometimes of a difference. But I haven't really been watching Man United, but I'm sure they've not been as in disarray as
United have won the title more than once since we moved stadium with a poor team.
Mm.
You know, with a team that frankly shouldn't be winning the title. And that is a testament to the manager's ability to get results and get his players performing to a level where, I mean, in effect, we've abdicated the title. In 2008, we should have won the title. There's an argument that says in 2010, we were in the box seat to win the title with the remaining fixtures we had. However, Arsenal collapse in spring, even if they're going for something, and that's now, even that's become a distant memory. Mm. But psychologically, the fragility of a Wenger team has always been under question. You can't say that about a Ferguson team, and that's the difference between the two managers.
I think also Wenger has been used to having Pat Rice sit on his side saying not much.
Saying yes, boss, no, and boss, somebody put the cones out.
And
boss.
Suddenly you've got Steve Bowl going there saying, no, look, this is how it's going to be. And you're right, Wenger probably doesn't like that. And there's going to be a point where there's going to be a clash, and obviously Wenger's going to get his way. And yeah, maybe there's been some little handbags or fisticuffs.
Well, the latest email that's come out from Arsene Wenger to all members, I can't remember how many times he said we failed defensively in that email, which is unusual for him to come out and say things like that, because he's normally fairly protective of everybody. So maybe those rumours have got an element of truth about them. And well, this is another way of him being out to sort of, you know, put Stevie Bold in his place or something.
Well, at least if he's saying that, he's honest about it and says, look, yeah, we're not good enough. At least then there's some hope, because we're not in denial about, oh, everything's all right and rosy when it isn't.
But although he's identified it, is he actually going to do anything to change it?
We will have to
watch. I
actually asked a question at the AGM about 3 years ago, maybe four, of Wenger, and basically said, we've lost the solidity defensively that Arsenal had a reputation for, because we'd conceded more goals the previous season than we had the season before, so there was an increase in the number going in. And his response was, basically, you can't buy a defender off a supermarket shelf, which is a line that's been used a few times since, and also that we are working very hard. And he's still saying we're working very hard on the defence, but it ain't working. That's the point. So it's not a recent phenomenon. You know, Arsenal defensively have had the collie wobbles. I mean, I can't remember exactly when, but I suspect that Spurs 4-4 draw at the Emirates about four seasons ago was when the rot started to really set in. And we've had a few games since then where you can never trust Arsenal when they've got a lead, even two goals. And the frequency with which,
especially two goals,
we're giving away leads in games which you would have thought a top team should be able to control is alarming. And that's why I think a lot of people are considering this particular decline now is terminal, because it's not changing.
It was interesting on Match of the Day how Gary Lineker asked Keown, he said, well, why didn't Wenger consider buying Berbatov? Or someone asked, you know, Wenger, if he did, that's right, considered buying Berbatov, and Wenger said, well, I didn't know he was available. The sanity question comes back in there, because, I mean, everyone knew Berbatov was available.
Could have been part of Van Persie deal.
I'd like to see
it. Could have just turned around and said, well, give us 24 million and chuck Berbatov in.
Well, that wouldn't have been a bad move. I think he's also, if he's going to sell these, like the players that are most important to us, he's got to get a bit of a better deal. You know, it reminds me of lease and loan in this country. You know, I always say to myself, why didn't Tony Blair say, all right, yeah, we'll go and fight your war for you, but we'll do a lease and loan like you did in the Second World War, so and the Americans would still be paying us up now for Iraq. You know, it was a silly war, but in the same token, we've got to be tougher when we're negotiating, just letting players like Fabregas, Van Persie go. I mean, I really did. I said this to Kev when I was at the Cologne game. I really thought if he could keep Van Persie, keep that team there that was at Cologne with Song and Van Persie and all the new signings. Yes, it would be financial disaster, whatever. But you know what? We'd probably have it. We'd be in like second or third position now, and we'd be right tucked in there, and we could probably win something. And it's not winning something is not our priority, obviously, because otherwise we would let Van Persie sit, you know, play out the season and give him on a free, whatever, doesn't matter, win something. And the risk being, maybe he wins something and thinks, sod it, I'll stay here. You know what I mean? We're now a top club.
You talk about the transfers in and out of the club. I'm still completely confused as to how it's organised at the club, because on one hand, you've got Richard Law, the man who is officially the head of transfers at the club, despite the fact last summer we didn't see through the deal to buy Juan Mata because he was in Costa Rica to make sure we get Joel Campbell, who now can't get in the Real Betis team on tour. On the other hand, you've got Ivan Gazidis, who, when he joined the club, in a very, very cocky and arrogant way, in fairness, just how he speaks, he said, as the deputy commissioner of the MLS, I handle more transfers than anyone in world football, so fans can trust me, I'll be good at this. So is it the left hand doing it? Is it the right hand doing it? Or is it ultimately just Wenger in the middle? Kev, any ideas?
Well, Wenger decides on the price he's willing to pay. And at that stage, some of the time he hands it over to Dick Law to actually seal the deal.
Right.
And part of the problem is that Wenger as a negotiator is not very good.
I believe you.
What used to happen was Wenger would identify a target and he'd name his price. And then David Dean would go away and negotiate with that as a basis, but he would then go an extra...
Yeah.
Million or two,
mm-hmm.
You know, he'd try and do a deal. I mean, in a way, the Ashley Cole wages negotiation were very symbolic of where the difference between what Dean can achieve and what ends up losing a player it happens. That's basically because Dean had agreed a wage of $60,000. And the board knocked it back on that occasion. So for the want of $5,000 a week, we lost Ashley Cole. Now, that's happening not so much with the board saying no, it's Wenger saying no now. The Wenger won't push the extra, even though we've got $60 million in the bank, which could be used. Wenger's so obsessed with his concept of value that he will not pay over the odds. And what you really have to understand in football is if you do have pretensions to be a big club, there is a premium there when you are buying players. You're going to have to pay more. If Fulham are coming in for someone, they will get a player for less than Arsenal will. Mm. But because Arsenal have got money, because people know Arsenal have got £60 million, they're going to charge you more. And frankly, Manchester United are willing to pay the price.
Mm.
Manchester United wants a player. They will just stump up the cash. It may be more than they want to, but at the end of the day, they know how it works. They are Manchester United. They're going to have to pay the money.
Well, they did that in the summer for Van Persie, an injury-prone 29-year-old.
Arsenal are a team with pretensions of being a big club who act like a small club. And until we change that mentality, we're going to continue missing on players that we need. Mark Schwarzer, what an irony.
Yeah.
Couldn't raise a bid from £2 million. And there's an argument that £2.5 million might have secured him. He saved the penalty against Arteta. Now, what if we just missed out by Champions League football at the end of the season by a point or two? And it was ended up being Schwarzer who was the reason. So you miss out on £40 million windfall for the sake of a 500,000 increase in your bid.
Mm.
That's small time thinking.
Yeah.
And that's what this club has become.
Yeah.
In a huge £60,000 stadium, we're acting like fucking Barnet.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's true. We would never have let go of Song, Van Persie, you know, in fact, you know, all the players we've let go, all the big names we've let go. You know, we're big clubs buy players like that, they do not sell them, or they certainly keep them. We add to them, you know. The way I was seeing it is, great, this is going to be our season, last season, I thought, because you know, when I watched that Cologne game, I know that Van Persie was, the ink was nearly dry on the contract, but I thought, what if he hadn't actually signed? What if, you know, Wenger just said, no, we're not selling you. Tough. You're playing for us this season.
Mm. In fact, I heard a rumour Van Persie was prepared to stay.
Oh,
but
don't.
Wenger decided that, no, you're out. Because he didn't like the negotiations that happened in May, in which apparently Van Persie wanted Pat Rice's replacement to be external. Because Van Persie was of the view that Steve Bould would be another yes man. So Van Persie said, we need to change direction, we need fresh input, we need someone who's going to bring something different to the party.
Wow.
And change our chances of winning something.
Where do you get this info from, Kevin?
There is something out there, Basti, called the grapevine.
You've got a little fly, you've got a little fly on Wenger's wall, haven't you, somewhere?
I'd also heard that as well. But I can't remember where I got it from.
No.
But one of the other things as well, I'm just touching on Van Persie again. You know, it was said at the AGM that we sold him for footballing reasons. I'd love to know what those footballing reasons are.
Not scoring as many goals.
Yeah. And also as well, just one final thing. You know, when the first voices of dissent about Arsene Wenger came out maybe about 3 or 4 years ago, one of the things that his supporters would always be saying was, well, if he goes, all our best players will go anyway. Well, he sold them. So where's your answer now?
Going back to Van Persie and looking at the, in fairness, the woeful results we've had so far this month. I mean, one league win, and then we're looking at what, two losses. Looking back to the Manchester United draw, Man United defeat. Inevitably, the game is essentially over after 2.5 minutes when guess who came up and scored the first goal. He got an awful lot of booing from Arsenal fans in that game. I didn't understand it. I don't understand Arsenal fans booing Robin Van Persie. Look, obviously, he's our ex-player, but he didn't put in a transfer request, didn't throw his toys out the pram. The statement he gave on his own website was that I made suggestions on the club, which Kev's elaborated on. And Graham, you know, disagreed with me and had to sell me. He hasn't taken the money to go elsewhere. I mean, my understanding is he wasn't actually given a financial offer by
the
Arsenal.
He was the Arsenal captain, and he did go to what once were our major rivals. He's going to get, people are not going to like an Arsenal captain, top goal scorer as well, saved our season last season, our saviour, and he leaves the sinking ship. You know, you want your saviour to be staying with you. So there's going to be resentment, there's going to be bitter feelings. I mean, personally, I wouldn't boo him myself. I thought he was a great player, and he still is, obviously. Unfortunately, not for us anymore. But, you know, it's not like Ashley Cole, who I would boo. But what was the difference between Ashley Cole and Robin Van Persie? Leaving for another, you know, a rival club, someone who's, the club
What's
has brought
What's the difference
up,
between Sol Campbell and Robin Van Persie?
Well,
I'll
awful,
tell
yeah.
you what the difference is. Sol, Tottenham got no money for Sol. Well, we got money for Van Persie. But well, ultimately, footballers are mercenaries.
Yeah, of course they are.
You've got to get your head around that. Now, yeah. An element of this booing is panto. Yeah, there is an element of panto at
course.
Football stadiums.
Oh, no, there's not. Oh, come on.
Fair play to Van Persie for not acting like Emmanuel Adebayor.
Yeah.
I mean, what Van Persie said when he made his statement echoed the feelings, I suspect, of a lot of supporters. So in fact, he's saying the same thing as we are. The only difference is now he's wearing a Manchester United shirt. Now,
well, we don't have that choice he has, because we're not going up to fucking Old Trafford, are we?
Yes. If you emotionally invest in football players playing for your team, frankly, you're a mug.
Yeah.
I said earlier, I don't do tattoos. The one thing I'd never do is a tattoo of a woman's name on my body.
Well,
because frankly, it ain't going to last. The same with bloody footballers.
No, but I wouldn't have Robin Van Persie's name either. But I would have Arsenal Football Club's crest. That's a different thing.
I think the other reason why people are upset about Van Persie going was the fact that, you know, we've suffered throughout his entire career of him only putting in half a season. You know, we sort of supported him with the problems that he had in his personal life.
Yes.
And yet, when it comes up for signing a new contract, he puts in the best season he possibly has.
And then leaves.
And he's got all these pictures, and he comes out with this comment about, I had to answer the little boy inside me. And then there's that lovely picture of him as a 12-year-old in his Arsenal bedroom with his Arsenal kit on. That's the stuff that people get upset about. Mm. You know. After a while, I think it would probably die down a little bit. But yeah, it is. It's, if you could do anything that you think might rattle the opposition, you do it. Mm. You know. Unfortunately, it was another sort of Vermaelen half clearance, half slipping over that gives it straight to Robin, and then you get the idiot like Santos at half time, you know.
But. Yeah, but I think it's a bit like in the first half of the podcast when we were talking about the board and how, you know, the words that came to my mind were Victoria Concordia Crescit, you know, victory through unity or harmony, and that's something that there's not a lot of harmony at board level. There's not a lot of harmony at pitch level, and certainly not on the between apparently Wenger and Bold. They were saying what a great spirit there is in the side all the time, but that is not reflected on what we're seeing on the pitch. And the fans will back it to a point, but there will come a point where there will not be a lot of harmony at fan level as well. And we've really got to at one point, you know, maybe we need to hit some sort of rock bottom, and something has to change. Probably Wenger going, I think, at one point. Either he's got to turn it around, or, I mean, how many years are we going to... We've been sitting here year on year saying, one more year for Wenger and then we'll see. You know, how long is that going to go?
Well, very soon he's going to have that unenviable record of being with us for 16 years and not only being one of our most successful managers, but also being our least successful manager. Because I don't think we've had a manager that's gone 8 years without winning a trophy.
He's already broken that record. He's the longest manager in situ to not win a trophy already.
I suppose the big question right now is...
How long was Terry Neill at the club?
Well, he won the FA Cup in the middle.
That's true, yeah.
Tom Whittaker?
He won the league.
I'm just naming old dead people off the top of my head.
Well, basically, they'd got rid of him if they hadn't won anything after 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, fair comment. I mean, you know, looking at going back to what we're talking about with Robin van Persie, I mean, you look at the other end of the field. Between the sticks, things aren't great. Chesney's had one of those weird injuries which keeps you out for 3 weeks, which obviously turns into 3 months. Fabianski's disappeared. If anyone has seen Lucas Fabianski out there, please alert the Metropolitan.
Out until February, I think.
February?
I believe so.
To make sure that he misses the January transfer window. Unbelievable, whilst earning £50,000 a week. Why won't Legia Warsaw re-sign him? Anyway, so he's gone disappearing. So we've got our third choice goalkeeper, an Easter Island statue with a body, who frankly can't keep goal. And then over the weekend, Julio Cesar comes out and says, well, Arsenal were apparently making inquiries for him. Where do we stand between the posts? Are we really, really praying that Chesney comes back on Saturday against Spurs, saves 3 penalties and wins the game single-handedly, Basti? Or do we need to find anyone? Jim Leighton will do.
I think Jim Leighton. I remember Jim Leighton playing for...
He came on loan to Arsenal.
He came on loan. I remember that, Jim Leighton.
He played in a testimonial, I think.
That's right.
He did actually.
I think I'd feel marginally better with Chesney behind the in between or behind the post. Actually,
yeah, that'd be right.
Yes, I think Mignone's doing as well as he can.
He's just not very good.
I mean that header. There was one.
The second Fulham goal.
Yeah. I mean, he got a hand.
It was a 20-yard header.
It was a 20-yard header. He got a hand to it, and it just didn't go. And the problem was Chesney. If we have short memories, but Chesney was making some right bloopers, kicking the ball out to opposition players and stuff before he... I mean, I thought he was...
Oh, the goal against Southampton.
And he had a very poor Euro 2012.
Well, not a very long one, anyway.
I thought he was dropped, but then the injury was just a bit too long for that.
Absolutely.
The other question I've got for you, David, as a goalkeeping expert, is related to fitness. Chesney was on the bench, correct?
Yes.
Does that mean he was fit to start?
Evidently, yeah. I mean, what happened if Mignone broke his leg taking a goal kick after 30 seconds?
So basically, my question is, was Mignone retained in goal because of how impressive he was away to Schalke?
For Wenger, I would have thought so.
Because he's made a howlers in the games before that, hasn't he?
Okay, I think it was this is your last chance. You can see he's fit, he's on the bench, he's ready to come on at any second. make sure you don't fuck it up, I'll keep you in goal going forward. I think he's guaranteed that Chesney will be in goal against Spurs. Kelvin, your view on goalkeepers? Are we praying for George Wood to be brought out of retirement?
Oh, yeah, George Wood. Well, Stuart Taylor and Richard Wright still knocking about somewhere, aren't they?
Absolutely.
George Wood, yeah, there's a bloke. He had one good game against us when he was playing for Blackpool, 0-0, and we ended up signing him and went downhill after that. I think Manone, let's not forget, he's our third choice goalkeeper. Mm-hmm. You know, and he would be prone to making some errors, but let's not forget, at the start of the season, we went three games without conceding a goal, which was our best start since 1928.
He's then, better than Jeff Barnett.
Then Chesney came in, and of course he conceded that goal against Southampton,
yes,
which was quite a soft effort.
Absolutely.
So I'm not prone to criticising Manone at the moment, because I know he's a third choice keeper. But yeah, we touched on Schwarzer earlier on. You know, we should have got someone with experience, even if he was just there to help with a bit of coaching for Chesney, to bring him along, because what is he, 21, 22? And at the moment, everybody says he's going to be at Arsenal for 15 years. And when you've got been labelled with that, and you look around and you see the quality of keepers you've got around, you think, I'm made.
Mm.
I'm there already, you know. And there is an air of cockiness about him. Some would look at it as being confident, which is fine. You need that in a goalkeeper. But it's a very fine line between confidence and cockiness. And I think he's got when he comes back, he's got to really start again.
He's a bit like Bentner. He talks a good, I'm the best in the world kind of game, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad that he doesn't do Twitter anymore, because obviously that was affecting him quite a bit.
Can I just make a quick point? The last question, something I forgot, which was I think was an insult to Arsenal fans. Sorry to leap back.
To wrap us up, actually, running out of time.
Okay,
please.
Is that when Kev was saying that, you know, it's the longest running manager without actually having won something. And Gazidis at the AGM, if I'm not wrong, was really labouring the point of how being fourth place and getting a Champions League spot is a trophy.
Arsene Wenger did that.
It was Arsene Wenger.
There are five trophies, according to Arsene.
Right.
What I'd like to know is, on the surround inside the stadium, we've got a number of years signifying when we've won trophies. The last year I can see is 2005. So if Champions League qualification is a trophy, where are the numbers on
Yes, Mr. Wenger. And also, coming fourth or third is not a trophy. End of.
Because if it is, I want a civic reception at Islington Town Hall with an open-top bus parade.
Yeah.
Providing they've got a giant cheque there, and you've got Gazidis with a smug look on his face, which, let's face it, has to...
Having said that, the last time we won a trophy in 2005, we did not do a civic reception.
Too arrogant, because the FA Cup just isn't worth getting the bus started for.
Well, that's a real pity, isn't it?
Sadly, on that note, that is unfortunately time for us to wrap up. Just a quick reminder that if you do want to email us about anything related to the podcast, our address is goonapodcast@gmail.com. And with that, I say goodnight to Kelvin, Kevin and Mr. Goldstein.
I am going to interject very briefly.
Oh, excuse me.
Because I am under orders from our publisher, Mr. Mike Francis. There is an issue with the Gooner out at the moment, which has plenty of interesting reading, including these things which we did not have time to discuss. David Udo's position as host is now in jeopardy.
Oh, no.
Tony Adams would like to manage Arsenal. Okay, that's one discussion point in one article. Playing players out of position, we did touch on at some points. That's another one. And something called lame defeat syndrome, which is something this club may or may not be suffering. Is it terminal, I ask myself. Anyway, the current issue remains on sale for the games against Spurs and Montpellier. And it's only still £2. Please buy and support us.
We haven't, but I've got to interject here. We are playing Tottenham, aren't we?
We are indeed.
What are we?
We're all looking forward to that immensely.
Well, in light of what Kevin said during his last chat, I hope this isn't the last time I'm saying goodbye to you. We will be back next month. Well, some people will be back next month with a pre-Christmas edition, possibly featuring the return of Bernard Agelet and Mark Ollington from our start of season edition that went down particularly well for some unknown reason, but we make no promises. I'm your host, David Udo, and thank you all for listening.
La-di-da-di-da, la-di-da-di-dee, all good friends and jolly good company, way!